are muted and video has been disabled. With this said, we will allow participants an opportunity to speak during public comment periods. If you wish to speak during public comment, there is a toolbar either at the top or bottom of your screen that will appear when you hover over it with your cursor. Click on the word participants and a box will open up on your screen showing a list of participants. And at the bottom of that box, you can click on raise hand. This will be seen by the meeting facilitator and you will be unmuted at the appropriate time to ask your question or to give input. During the time you are unmuted, please make sure that you don't have any background noise such as TVs and radios and so forth. Even the shuffling of papers can be picked up and cause disruptive audio feedback through the microphones. All of our standard procedures will be adhered to, such as stating your name and address when called on. Comments will be kept to 5 minutes or less, and vulgarity and the inappropriate language will not be tolerated and will result in being immediately muted and possibly removed from the meeting. If you are unsure how to virtually raise your hand to participate in discussions, you can call 582-6597 at any time during the meeting, and an executive, I think it's Pat Haver, will be happy to assist you with the process. I'd like to thank everyone in advance for your patience and cooperation as we work through tonight. With that introduction, I would like now to call the meeting to order and start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thank you. Roll call, please, Cindy.
Conklin?
Here.
Brunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item or items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have three items. Item A is approval of the July 28th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. Item B is approval of a proposed addition to Airport Hangar B5 and authorize the city airport manager to extend the lease term for up to 10 years as outlined and execute the document. And item C is approval to award a purchase order contract to Applied Pavement Markings of Harbor Springs, Michigan for a 2020 asphalt crack sealing services in the amount not to exceed $13,210 per the bid dated 8/1/2020 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Those are our three items, commissioners. Is there any discussion on any of those items? If not, I would take a motion.
I'd move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please, Cindy.
Conklin?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on in the agenda to hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. There'll be a 5-minute limit, and these are any topics that are not on the agenda tonight. Do we have anybody, Patrick?
I'm seeing none.
Okay. Let's move on then to correspondence. We have a letter from the Friendship Centers of Emmett County regarding the termination of the Retired Senior Volunteer Program. And we have a tip of the mint watershed council report. This report is on file in the city clerk's office for review. Any comments, commissioners or staff? Okay, moving on to item six, the city manager's report. Mike?
Okay, thank you, Tom. Last week we received word that the required permit to complete the Boeing Valley Trail, namely for the railroad crossing just east of US 131, has been issued. Our engineers at OHM are contacting the contractors to see about scheduling the remaining work. So hopefully we can get that wrapped up before too long. I'm pleased to report and actually have to show you here the executed EMS agreement with Boeing Valley Township. Our EMS director, John Lamont, received that agreement at the township's board meeting last night. So that completes the agreement process. So congratulations to all involved. John and Cindy worked very hard with our counterparts at Boeing Valley Township to make that a win-win for everybody involved. So thank you. Our DPW was assisting the Lakes Charlevoix group that's been doing the demonstration gardens in Sunset Park with their boulder placement to help deal with the high water issues and our resulting erosion. So that was taking place today. The DPW's new single axle dump truck that the commission approved earlier, the cab and chassis has been received by Zaremba's. And next week it'll be off to Truck and Trailer Specialties for upfitting of the box, scraper, and salter and the other type of equipment. The truck remains on track for delivery in December and for us to be able to use for the rest of the winter. So that seems to be coming along nicely. Tim gave us some feedback with regards to our curbside rubbish collection program that we had this spring. The one that we held on May 23rd, the cleanup cost was a little over $30,000, and that was a little bit above the $29,000 estimate. There was a lot more material brought in than Tim originally anticipated. That leaves us with a balance of just under $21,000 for our September 19th fall cleanup, assuming that we go forward with it. We anticipate that we'll probably be a little bit over budget, but unless there's some concerns or objections from the commission, staff is planning to move forward with that for, again, September 19th for our second cleanup. The Army Corps of Engineers is reporting that the level of Lake Michigan and thereby Lake Charlevoix has begun to decrease for the season after reaching a record high, which was some 2 inches higher than the previous 1986 record. So we're hoping to see that actually take place. Since the agenda packet went out, we received new correspondence regarding Boeing USA Incorporated's relicensing of their Boeing River hydroelectric facility. We've placed that information on the city's website. It's under the community goals, reports, master plans, and studies tab that's on the left-hand side, then just follow the links to it. There's a bit of information there, and everybody's welcome to take a look. We're pleased to report that our executive assistant, Barb Brooks, has been accepted into this year's Michigan Municipal League Women's Municipal Leadership Program. That program begins later this month and is scheduled to continue into December. Kind of think of it as a form of Leadership Charlevoix, but on the state level and dealing specifically with the municipal government. So congratulations, Barb. There was a lot of competition to get into that. We received 9 applications for the city clerk treasurer's position by yesterday's deadline, and review of those applications will begin later this week. So if you have any questions on these or other items, I'd be glad to try and address them.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioners, any questions? Okay. Thank you. Moving on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have in our commission's packets minutes from all of our boards, and this to keep us up to date. We have the draft minutes of the July 6th Historical Commission meeting. We have the draft minutes of the July 13th EDC meeting. We have the draft minutes of the July 13th LDFA meeting, and we have the draft minutes of the July 16th Airport Board meeting, and the draft minutes of the July 20th Planning Commission meeting. Commissioners, any questions and discussion on those?
Yeah, Mayor, I just had one observation. It was in the airport minutes about bicycles on the taxiway. And Mike, I was just wondering, has anything been done about that as far as a signage, or is this a real problem with bikers kind of getting, losing their orientation and heading the wrong way?
Well, I don't think they're losing their orientation. I think they're looking for an open field to explore. And as you're going, I guess it'd be westbound on the trail, it is kind of an inviting area to go check out. So a couple of the airport board members were going to have some signs prepared and placed along the perimeter there by that area to discourage people from using it. It hasn't caused any specific problems yet, but we don't want it to turn into one.
Would it be possible to have signs that might be a little more noticeable as you enter, prior to entering the airport parking area there? You know, just I think.
I don't think it'd be helpful. They're coming in off the trail view, not from the other area.
Oh.
So if you go to the, it'd be the east end of the runway there, where the big dip is off the road there.
Okay.
You go underneath the Great Lakes Energy power lines. That's the area that they seem to be coming in from.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of like they're doing a little bit of mountain biking in that area, even though it's flat.
Oh, okay. Well, I do think there might be, signage might be improved, though, at the entry there where people park and, you know, that type of thing, so.
Okay, I'm sure they'll keep looking on that.
Thanks.
Thank you, Hugh. Anything else, commissioners? Okay, moving on to old business. We do not have any. So moving on to new business, item A, 600 Jefferson rezoning request first reading. So I'll explain a little housekeeping here. What we'll do is we'll have a report from the city, from the staff. We will have opportunity for anyone else to speak on behalf of the city as far as department heads and or our attorney. And then we will hear from developer, and then we will open up to public comment. And at that time, I'll review again the public comment policies. But and then we can come back to city staff and or to the developer for any follow-up. So that's kind of the order we're going to take. Let's start with Scott with our staff report.
Thank you, Mayor. A rezoning application has been submitted by GISA LLC to rezone parcels 15051026005000 and 15051026004015 from conditional multiple family residential district to manufacturers housing development district. The parcels are located at 600 Jefferson Street. Parcel 02600500 is approximately 20 acres with 660 feet of frontage on Jefferson Street and measures 1300 feet deep. Parcel 02600415, which is adjacent to the east, is approximately 10 acres and measures 660 by 660. The property to the north of the subject parcels are in Evangeline Township and are zoned rural residential and being used for single family dwellings. The property to the east is in the city of Boyne City and zoned residential rural estate district and is being used for a church. Mm-hmm. To the south of the property is zoned rural estate district and being used for single family dwellings and a conditionally zoned multi-family residential district being used for group and senior and assisted living. The properties to the west are zoned traditional residential district and are being used for single family dwellings. Public and sewer and water are located adjacent to the property on Jefferson Street. And the parcel is currently vacant with majority of the parcel covered with mature forest. On the eastern quarter of the property, there is a significant slope and elevation change of over 40 feet. The subject property was conditionally zoned for multifamily development in 2016. The conditional agreement specified the allowed uses, density, site, layout, building styles, and timelines. The deadline included in the agreement was extended by the City Commission for 1 year in April of 2019, and again for 1 year in January of 2020. The expiration date for the agreement is April 25th, 2021. While the master plan future land use map designated the property as residential open space, the plan also notes that additional specific locations for future multiple family uses are not designated on the future land use map, but will be considered on a case-by-case basis so the Planning Commission can have the flexibility to review the appropriateness of specific areas when the need arises. At the time of the conditional zoning approval in 2016, the need for housing in the city and region were well documented, and since that time, the need has only increased. Given the size and location of the property, the 30-acre tract is one of the few undeveloped large pieces of land in the city on a paved street with the availability of water and sewer. In 2016, the city recognized the need for housing development and the unique opportunity the site provided to help meet that need, and the Planning Commission and City Commission approved the conditional zoning. As part of the consideration for the proposed zoning change, reviews were done by the Boynton City Police Department, EMS, and the Water Wastewater Department in regards to impacts on city services. Each of these departments confirmed that the existing capacity and personnel were sufficient to handle the increased demand from the proposed development. As the capacity reviews were completed with the assumption of a total build of 212 units, these analyses would still hold true as the total number of units for the proposed change would be significantly less. In reviewing the proposal, a determination in regards to the requirement of a traffic impact study is required. Section 2.50C6 stipulates that a traffic impact analysis is required if the proposed rezoning district permits uses that could generate 100 or more directional trips during the peak hour, or at least 1,000 trips per day, more than the majority of the uses that could be developed under the current zoning. I go into a lot of numbers and counts that were done, and it might be a little simpler if I just try to summarize that. When we did this analysis in 2016, we did a traffic count and also projected the trips per day for the proposed conditional zoning. And at that time, those did not reach those thresholds that require a traffic analysis. And the existing capacity of the road was shown to be relatively low. We're looking at 3 to 4% usage at the time, with the build out of the conditional zoning perhaps maxing out at 20% capacity of the road. With this proposed change, they're looking at reducing the number of units, and also the trip generation per this type of use is less than what was previously permitted. So with those two reductions, traffic impact analysis would not be required. Original approval, the property owner considered numerous design and financing options to initiate the development. However, citing rising construction costs and labor availability, the project was not financially feasible. In February 2020, the property was sold to Giza LLC, owned by Stephen Bracci. On June 26, 2020, Mr. Bracci submitted a zoning change application that would rescind the current conditional agreement and change the zoning designation to Manufactured Housing Development District. The only principal permitted use allowed in the MHDD district is a manufactured housing development. With the application, a conceptual layout of 145 units and information about manufactured homes and manufactured homes communities was also submitted. While the submittal of a specific site plan or development concept is not required or approvable, with the zoning change application, the provided information is good representation of what a manufactured housing development on the site would look like. Manufactured housing developments must comply with specific zoning and state requirements of the manufactured housing general rules, and the layout, design, and density of the provided concepts were developed in compliance with those standards. While this specific plan may not be submitted for approval if the zoning is changed, a very similar plan would need to be developed in order to meet required standards. In accordance with the Michigan Zoning Enabling Act, the Boyne City Zoning Ordinance, a public hearing was held by the Planning Commission on July 20th, 2020. After the public hearing, the Planning Commission reviewed the proposal and voted not to recommend approval of the proposed zoning ordinance amendment. The motion passed on a 4-2 vote. The draft minutes of the July 20 meeting have been attached, and audio of the meeting is available on the city website. As required per section 24A3, following review, the Planning Commission shall submit their recommendation to the City Commission, where the City Commission will act upon the request by granting approval, disapproval, or referral back to the Planning Commission for additional study. The proposed amendment is now being presented to the City Commission for first reading. As required by the Boyne City Charter, ordinances cannot be adopted until at least 1 month after a meeting it is introduced. The next available City Commission meeting that meets this requirement would be September 22nd, 2020. The City Commission has the following options. First is schedule a second reading for September 22nd or later. You can send the proposed amendments back to the Planning Commission for further consideration, take no action or other action as determined by the City Commission. It is the recommendation that review the proposed change and schedule a second reading for the September 22nd, 2020 or later.
Thank you, Scott. Let's move on to commissioners. Let's save your questions. We'll have an opportunity. Let's move on to any other department heads or staff. Any comments? If not, we'll refer to our city attorney, Mr. Jim Murray.
Can you hear me, Mayor?
I can.
Can you hear me, Mayor? Hearing?
Can everybody hear Jim?
First.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, and nice job, Scott, on your report. I don't plan on rehashing anything you said in there. It was pretty complete. For some of you commissioners, it may be the first time you've considered a rezoning, so I'll just give you a short overview of the big picture. Your role tonight is the fact that you sit as legislators, and your consideration to amend a zoning revision is a legislative action, sometimes called legislative function, which is different than an administrative function. So, in other words, you are the ultimately the final decision maker, not tonight because of, city regulations that you have to comply with, but could be at the next meeting, but ultimately at some point in time, you have a duty to pass and consider the request to rezone. So your goal is to substantially advance the legitimate interest of the city, but to at the same time not deny the property owner their constitutional rights. So you kind of have a balancing test. And unfortunately, there's not a set standard I can give you because the law doesn't have one. Really, you need to apply the facts as applied to this property and this project and the reasonableness of the request. In doing so, you can review all possible uses for this particular entire district, for this particular property, not just the owner's request, but other uses that could be made of the property. In addition, you can and should look at your master plan. In addition, you should look whether it's consistent with zoning classifications in the general area and trends of use in the area. You should be, you should and can review the suitability for the designated purpose for the manufactured home that you'll hear proposed in a few minutes. The adequacy of public services are important. Traffic, as was mentioned by Scott, And so other relevant factors in again, trying to pull this balancing test of advancing the city's legitimate and substantial legitimate interests. So as Scott, I think, believe touched upon, you may act contrary to the Planning Commission, or you may follow a Planning Commission, and you may hold another public hearing, or you may refer it back to the Planning Commission. But ultimately, it's your time to act as legislators and consider and ultimately, but again, not tonight, move on this project request. So that's all I had at this point.
I have a quick question, Jim. Can you expand on the concept of returning it back to the Planning Commission or not returning it back to the Planning Commission? Legally, what
yes.
would be your...
Well, the zoning enabling statute simply uses the word may. It says you as the legislative body may refer any proposed amendment to the zoning commission, which in your case is the Planning Commission, for consideration and comment within a time specified by the legislative body. But Mayor, it doesn't give reasons why you may do it or you may not do it. So you clearly, by the use of the word may, don't have to. I guess if there's a circumstance that may arise or you feel it arises, that it would be reasonable, helpful in performing your legislative duties, you're free to do so, just like you may hold another public hearing. I'm not sure if I answered your question directly, but there is no exact answer on why you should or whether you have to.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions for Mr. Murray?
I have one. Jim.
Please, you.
Well, Jim, what role does the state play here? There's state regulations and you know, that type of thing. Is that anything important to consider now?
I think it may fit in the adequacy of public services and other factors, but, you know, the Zoning Enabling Act gives you certain rights. That's why it's referred to as an enabling statute. I guess I would take the totality of all factors in rendering your decision, but your real decision should be to follow the Zoning Enabling Act and your own city zoning ordinance. And I wouldn't tell you to disregard state laws, but I would use it as a factor. And then how much you weigh it is up to you. I would weigh your city zoning ordinance more than I would state, because let the state deal with state issues. So if these homes had a problem with the state or Lara or anyone else, you know, they would find out independent of Boyne City.
Thank you.
Can I try and jump in here for a second, Mayor?
Yes, please, Mike.
Going to Hugh's comment, I'm thinking the state might have more of a role to play depending if the city commission approves this or not. I think they'd be more involved in kind of like the site plan layout of the site after our planning commission reviewed it, if it ever gets that far. So I think they would have some more specific impact with regards to this project at that level, more so than with regards to this rezoning that's before us now.
Thank you, Mike. Any further questions? We'll come
back.
Here
if you need me.
Oh, I'm sorry, I've muted myself. Sorry.
Yes, Dean.
Yeah, I don't know if now is the right time to ask this or not, but I was curious about that Manufactured Home Act, and you know, it has certain requirements in it, of course, and to some degree they preempt our local regulations, or at least we have to be consistent. I was curious about that, exactly how that works, and I was especially curious, there was some discussion about the new stormwater ordinance that we passed and whether that would be preempted by that act, or whether that's something that is still within our bailiwick.
Scott or Jim?
Well, I think there's some truth to the preemption with the manufactured home rules. I don't think the city has jurisdiction over those rules, if that's what you're asking. I'm not sure what you mean by the stormwater, but that is, again, the public service element is very important to review adequacy of public services, if that's what you meant. And that is relevant.
Okay, great, thank you.
But again, it's a factor. I keep throwing out that it's not, you know, the only standard.
I think we'll have the chance for staff to weigh in after further discussion, after we hear from the developer and hear from the public. At this point, if there's no further questions, commissioners, I will turn it over to Mr. Bracci, and if he's ready for the presentation.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. I want to introduce my team that I believe are all on the call here this evening. Mr. Don Westfall, who is my developer and done the preliminary layout. He's been doing layouts of manufactured home communities for 50 years. And he is the one that can address some of the questions I just heard, because he's also sat on the Mobile Home Commission boards for many, many years, and I think is quite familiar with the inner workings between local ordinances and the Mobile Home Commission and Mobile Home Commission Act. I also have Mr. Mark McKellar, who is an attorney versed in zoning matters, as a part of my team here on the call this evening. And let me just introduce myself. I've met Mr. Mayor. I've met the other commission members. I don't think I've had the privilege of meeting. I've been a resident here at Boyne City since 1994. I live at 3780 Springwater Beach Road, and have been involved in development for many years. I'm a practicing attorney. I'm a licensed real estate broker, and have done single family developments in Grand Rapids, starting in 1999, about a 75 home development. I've done a condo development in Traverse City that I own now as rental property. And I've bought and flipped about 250 houses throughout Michigan, three, four here in the Boyne City area. I own rental properties in the Boyne City area. I own rental properties in the Grand Rapids area, and as I said, in Traverse City. And I tell you that just so you understand that I've had the challenges of stick-built housing and remodeling, and knowing the frustration and the cost associated with that in this day and age. And I've also been exposed to, when I have a vacancy in any of my rental units, which I personally manage myself, most of them, with assistance of some other folks, but there are no available rental units. I hear time and time again in Boyne City, particularly when I put an ad on Craigslist, I'm inundated with calls, same with Traverse City. And the lack of any rentals. I was just talking to a neighbor tonight and had a friend that was looking. So the problem of housing is forefront. And when I started talking to Ted Maxey last year about this project and this property, and did some math with him, and I tried to market it and find some apartment developers, it was concluded that with the combination of the exorbitant cost of construction per square foot, the unavailability of consistent workforce in the area, that an apartment complex, the numbers just couldn't work. And started looking at manufactured home communities. And I've done a lot of research, as I think evidenced in part by the little booklet I put together for you. and tried to educate myself and provide information about what manufactured home communities can provide. And I've met with Steve Schnell and worked extensively with Steve over the last number of months, who you know is the director for the housing development for Housing North, about what are the demands, what are the needs locally. And I've attached to the addendum that I submitted to you this evening the conclusions of the study from 2019 that shows that Charlevoix County is projected to need approximately 1,200 new living units in the next 5 years. And that affordable housing component is critical. And of course, we all know that affordable housing helps support the community, supports the workers that do work at all the businesses in our community, and is critical to a successful community. And I think this is a nationwide problem, and you know, resort towns like Aspen and Vail and other towns, people are priced out of living there. They want to live there and work there and raise their family. And manufactured home communities provide that opportunity. We've presented a PowerPoint here, Patrick, if we want to pull that up and start with the PowerPoint presentation. And while he's doing that, I just want to briefly touch on the Planning Commission meeting of a couple, two, 3 weeks ago. And I'll just say that my perception of what occurred was not an application of appropriate factors that are required under the ordinance, and specifically Section 2.5C of the ordinance, and that the discussion and the issues that were raised were frankly irrelevant to a rezoning question, and they dealt with the pitch of the roofs, the return of investment by homeowners, questions that really don't bear on the rezoning. And I respectfully suggest that their decision was not based on material and substantial evidence to not recommend to the City Commission the request for the rezoning. So, having said that, let's go to page 2 of this presentation, if we could. And this is the study summary that I've attached in your booklet as well, from Housing North, that concludes that there's a total of 1,192 additional housing units necessary in Charlevoix County through 2025. And of that, the units, 400 are owner-occupied, and 792 are rentals. 94% are for people earning less than $40,000 per year, and 89% are housing under 250. When you do the math for a person that makes $40,000 a year, rule of thumb is a third of their income for housing costs, which is about $1,100 a month, is kind of the sweet spot for them to be able to afford to live. That doesn't get you much in this day and age for a stick-built house, if you can find one. So that study suggests that we need housing for people of about $1,100 a month cost to make it work for people 40,000 and under. You can read the numbers here that goes up to higher income levels, and that's the projected need over the next 5 years. Next slide, please. And, you know, the demand is high because there's just been a lack of building in our communities of lower end housing. And I think it's driven in part by the cost of housing is prohibitive to build anything less than about $225 a square foot. And, you know, do the math on what that can build plus land cost, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the days of the cost effective lower cost housing developments, standalone single family, are gone for now because of the rising costs. And I think what happened after 08, that Michigan lost a lot of its trades and people were forced to find other trades because there were no jobs in construction. And a lot of them moved to states where there was continuing development. And I think that's exacerbated the problem here. Why, if you can get a contractor, you're going to pay a premium because they're far and few between that have availability. Can you go to the next page, please? So I've put together some frequently asked questions about what are manufactured homes after I did some research and tried to just kind of give a backdrop of what they are. They're built according to a HUD code. Those vary by region throughout the country. So they are geared toward the northern environment. They require certain snow loads. Roof pitch is all dictated by these HUD codes. And these HUD codes and the construction of these homes, you know, frankly, are a better environment than homes that are built on site because they're done in a controlled environment in a factory and built to these specifications that are quite demanding. If you go to the next slide, please. There's many options for financing homes. I've talked to local banks here, Charlevoix State Bank. I've talked to the one whose name escapes me in Gaylord, but there's many options for financing for them. Manufactured homes do appreciate in value if they're in a good community and in a good overall community like Boyne City. You know, it's like any investment in real estate. If you take care of it and it's location, 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 if it's located in a growing, thriving community, it's going to be a good investment. And it certainly is a better investment than someone who rents an apartment for 10 years because you get zero back when you pay rent to a landlord. In manufactured homes, you get a return on your investment, just like you do a stick built. Next slide, please. Manufactured homes are as good or better built because of the controlled environment. They're energy efficient. And again, the HUD codes will require for Northern Michigan properties appropriate energy efficiencies and insulation. These are not trailers. I would consider some of the structures in Lakeview Village trailers because they're of that age and, you know, 50, 60 years old. And that's a very well-kept village and community. But those are, some of those are trailers. What the homes here, what we're going to be selling, our homes, and we have pictures of those later in this presentation of what they look like, and they are homes, they're not trailers. Next slide, please. They are safe, they're built to HUD codes. They can withstand weather events like hurricanes better than some site-built homes. And they're designed to prevent fires with fire retardant. So they are very safe. There was some speculation or concern raised early on that this was going to be a subsidized housing of some kind. This is not going to be a subsidized housing. It is, as I point out in the HUD article later in my material, it is the largest form of non-subsidized cost-effective housing in the country. Manufactured homes are. So, but this is not going to be a subsidized community. Next slide, please. Oh, here's some numbers on cost and affordability. And you can look at these and do the math and, you know, somebody that can buy a single wide unit for $55,000 and 6% interest, $350 a month, 5% in, 5% down, and the 450 lot rent, you're at $744 a month, plus some utilities. Well within that $1,100 a month range for people making 40,000 or in that range. If you buy a bigger home, a multi-unit, and that could be a three bedroom, two bath, then your payments are gonna be say $635 a month with 5% down, $602 a month for 10% down, and with 20% down, $535 a month. And with a 50% debt to income ratios, that could be as low as 23,000 income level. And of course, this is all dependent on credit scores and the like. But here's some other examples of financing that's available and the payments associated therewith. So I think these homes, they hit the sweet spot of what is really critical in our community as evidenced by the studies by Housing North. Next study, next slide, please. The proposed drawing is 145 sites that Mr. Westfall has designed. That's about 4.9 units an acre. It's a decrease of 76 units from the current 67 units, I'm sorry, from the current approved number of units of 212. By comparison, Lakeview Village has 6.4 units an acre right now. And with the approval that was recently provided for another 19 units on their property, they're going to be at 7.25 units an acre. This property, because it has a couple acres and the topography doesn't lend itself to development, and given the design that Mr. Westfall has put together that takes into account the neighbors and giving buffer zones and compliance with the Mobile Home Commission rules, we're at about 4.9 units an acre. And that's what we intend to submit to the Planning Commission for approval on the site plan. And of course, submit that to the state of Michigan, which you cannot deviate from what the local planning commission approves on a site plan when it's submitted to the state of Michigan. So the planning commission will have a great deal of control over what this site plan will ultimately look like. If this project moves forward at the pace we hope, by next summer, fall, we should be seeing homes being put in there. That's our goal. And to try to address the urgency of the problem that's continuing to rise. And you know, I think we're seeing in our northern communities, I know in Traverse City and around here, and Pat O'Brien could comment on this. I don't know if he's on the call or not, but housing up here is going crazy. And I think a lot of it is people wanting to get away from bigger cities. And I think our problem is only going to increase with the lack of affordable housing for people to do that and move from the bigger cities and you know, enjoy what we all enjoy up here in smaller communities, and particularly Boyne City. So having said that, I'm gonna turn it over now to Don Westfall, let him walk you through, if I could, the plan he put together, talk a little bit about that. And then I'd like to have an opportunity to talk about a few other matters after he's completed his presentation. Don?
Well, thank you very much. I do want to be sure, am everybody hearing me?
Yes.
Good. Well, thank you very much. I'm a Michigan resident. I live in Rochester, Michigan, was raised in Port Huron, went to Michigan State, and got a master's degree from the University of Illinois, and couldn't find married student housing back in the 1960s, so I bought a 36x8 mobile home and moved it into a little trailer park in Champaign-Urbana and wrote a term paper and eventually got hired by the Mobile Home Manufacturers Association as a consultant. And I designed my first manufactured home community in 1964. I felt like I was on top of the world. I got paid $45 and went to the Lincoln Hotel for a prime rib and had $10 left over, so I figured things are really good then. So we've been designing manufactured home communities now for over 50 years. The numbers are up in the 100,000s. And just as an aside, my mother, when my father, a policeman, passed away, moved into a mobile home in a little manufactured home community in Marysville, Michigan. And she loved it. It was perfect for her. And she took a lot of pride in it. And when we finally moved her into a assisted living facility, she said, "Oh, Donnie, I miss my mobile." And so these houses are real places for people, and they find a real warm spot in these folks' hearts. So over the years, I've designed manufactured home communities all across the country. I wrote written articles. I wrote a book on zoning for manufactured housing. I wrote a book on upgrading older manufactured home communities. And every year give a seminar along with a friend on developers, how to go about properly developing a manufactured home community. And seven of my projects have won national awards in terms of their acceptability and design and so forth. So very proud of what I do. I believe in all my heart that this is a wonderful opportunity for people to get into housing. It's great for young couples who need to get started. and it's great for older couples who can't maintain their big house. And one of the nice features of manufactured homes is that when we provide a home for an older person or an older couple in their community, they want to stay there. And when they move into a manufactured home in their community, they then sell their site-built house, and the cycle kind of repeats itself. So it's kind of a great thing. So I'd like to go, if we could take the first slide in the set, and I'll kind of go through the process. Of all of the projects that we've designed over the years, I can only count on my hand a couple of 10 or so units that we've designed in our firm that I haven't had my feet on the ground in. It's very important for me as a landscape architect to understand the land, to be able to understand the surroundings, understanding the difficulty that zoning for manufactured housing has always been, to try and build the plan in a way that's going to be not only a great place for our residents to live, but acceptable in its ultimate development for the neighbors around it. And we've got many cases where manufactured housing started out in the hinterlands because zoning was impossible, but the development occurred around it, and very expensive site-built houses happen right next door. So let's go to the next slide, please. This is a map from your ordinances. The center map shows exactly where it is. You can see the previous designation, orange with the black stripes. On the far right there is an overall aerial photograph of the area with the site outlined in black. You can see single family homes to the bottom of the plan across the street, and then the adult living facility in the lower right-hand corner. Next slide, please. We do after our first trip to the site, we do what we call a site analysis, where we outline where the topography is, where the water will end up, look at soils on site, look at the topography, like was mentioned in a previous presentation. The upper right-hand corner of the plan there has a severe slope and it's all wooded. There's woods on the rest of the property, but as you can see, portions of the property are also open, lower right-hand corner. There's an area in the middle that's a kind of a grayish color that had some high water table issues that we will explore as we go through the site plan further. And then you can see the directional aerials on the property indicate which way the water will go. And most of the water then goes to the lower left-hand corner of the site. And you can see how we considered that as a part of our site plan layout. Next slide, please. So this is our concept plan for the project. Well, we like to do projects that have curvilinear streets. Image in a manufactured home community is very important. We want to create a good image for those passing by, as well as a pride of ownership in the community as well. And so starting from the left, the highway road frontage there has a 50-foot front yard setback, which is required by the Mobile Home Commission Act. We have buffers along the upper and lower areas adjacent to single family uses. You can see the plan leaves out and utilizes the hill area for recreation purposes and open space. The project has a boulevard entrance that leads directly up to the clubhouse. There'll be a small community building there, which is a gathering space for the residents and a place for the office for full-time management of the community. And the lots all meet and exceed the lot requirements area-wise for not only your ordinance, but also for the Michigan Manufactured Home Community Act. Let me just take a minute to lead you through the process there. Over, well, it's now 40 years ago, the state of Michigan legislature put together the Mobile Home Commission Act, which is now the Manufactured Home Commission Act. And that act puts the a level playing field for not only the industry, but also for municipalities and for the residents of the community. So all three aspects of the industry are regulated ultimately by the state. The state of Michigan issues the permit to construct for all manufactured home communities that are built in Michigan. In order for us to submit plans to the Manufactured Home Commission, we need to have four preliminary approvals. These are preliminary approvals from, and they're normally county road, health, drain, and planning. And in municipalities like Boyne City, three of those four, I believe, preliminary approvals come from your municipality. Once we have those various local approvals, then those preliminary plans are put into construction plans, which are sent to the state. And the EGLE, the used to be the old commission on environmentals, and then the Mobile Home Commission, LARA, actually issues a permit to construct. And we've, in the process over the years, have put probably close to 60 or 70,000 lots in the state of Michigan through the Commission Act. One of our award-winning projects is in Traverse City, and very proud of that project as well. So the plan itself reflects our site visit, our analysis, and what we feel is required. Let me just state that one of the issues that was raised during the Planning Commission was that you have an ordinance that allows up to 10 units per acre in a manufactured home community. I've been doing this for 50 years, and when I first started, the most dense projects that we did were 8 units per acre, and right now, today, most of the communities that we design in the state of Michigan and across the country are in the 5 to 6 unit per acre. The argument has been raised on a couple of occasions that, oh, hey, if you guys get this zone, then you can throw 10 units per acre in there. I will tell you, based on my experience, and I've been on the Ordinance Review Committee for the Mobile Home Commission now for almost 35 years, I can tell you that you cannot get 10 units per acre in any manufactured home community in the state of Michigan, and that the Commission Act actually limits the amount of units you can get per acre based on the setback requirements and the square footage of each lot, to the point where getting 6 units per acre is about the maximum you can get. So we're just going to throw that argument right out the window at this point. I will just say a couple of other issues. We talked in our site analysis that the drainage from the project heads to the lower left-hand corner of the plan that you see there. And as a result, we have provide for detention in that area. And yes, our plans that are ultimately designed will have to meet your local stormwater ordinances. Could I go to the next slide, please? This slide is there for a couple of reasons. Number one, it indicates that we have a range of multi-section and single-section houses. Single-section houses are 16 feet wide and can limited in length to 76 feet. Multi-section houses are 2-sectional units. Each unit being about 14 feet wide, and those units tend to be shorter in length, many times only up to 66 feet. Probably the most popular is a 56 by 28 foot box. At what you see here, the units in red are multi-section units. And the couple of important things here is you can see the multi-section units are the higher priced, more attractive units. And we place those units adjacent to existing single family uses that are adjacent. And you can see that we would have sidewalks on one side of the streets in all of these plans as we submit them. And we try to get from the back of the community through that little green space you see there down the interior street so that you can get to the clubhouse without having to travel along all of the streets to get there. So that's the basics of our plan. I'm proud of the plan. It's going to be a beautiful addition. And I know that based on my past experience, this plan not only serves the needs of your ordinance, the Commission Act, and so forth. Next slide, please. I use these slides to indicate that these are not the trailers that you've seen in the past, or mobile homes. These are attractive single-family houses. And I will tell you that the three houses on the left are multi-section houses that are in a community that I previously owned in Grass Lake, Michigan, that was a national award winner back 30 years ago when we first opened that community. On the top right and top middle right, top middle and top bottom, these are single section houses. And then the one in the middle on that page is a multi-section house with an attached carport. The lots are large enough so that if the owner decides they want to have an attached garage, and many of our seniors like that, they want to be able to click the clicker and get into their house out of the elements. I think that's important at Boyne City. And then on the right are some pictures of interiors of the houses, kitchens and bathrooms. And invite any of you to go to a local manufactured home retailer and see for yourself how attractive these houses are inside and outside. Next slide, please. So I think we've talked about all of those items that are on there. We have sanitary sewer and runoff protections. We know that there's enough water and sewer to service this site. That gives you another entity to sell your services to. And then we've put a lot of studies together that indicate what a value manufactured homes are in terms of providing affordable places for folks to live, and in many cases, a stepping stone to their own on-site constructed house. So I just would add one thing. I wrote a book on zoning for manufactured home communities and have been in zoning meetings all over the country. And I will have to humbly compliment Steve on what a terrific job he's done in putting the presentation together that you all have in preparation for this meeting. All of the dots have been eyed, or the I's have been dotted and the T's are crossed. And we will use this as an example of how to go about putting together a great zoning presentation in a seminar that we're offering coming up in September on a webinar. So I'm available to answer any and all of your questions. I don't think there's been a question answered or asked over the last 50 years that I haven't been able to answer, or at least five an answer to if I didn't have it on the tip of my tongue. So thank you for taking the time, and turn it back over to Steve.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate that. Could you go to the next slide, please? So I posted an ad on Craigslist 3 months ago, maybe, when I started looking at doing this, just to see what kind of reaction I would get. And I probably got 50 plus responses. And this is just some examples of some of them. And most of them were, heck yeah, where do I sign up? And, you can read these, and it was a constant theme of we've looked, can't find anything. You know, this one here says been renting for the last 6 years in the same place and love the opportunity to own their own home. Next slide, please. Very interested, and I have all these people's emails and contact information, and we'll keep them abreast of how this is developing, and I anticipate quite a few of them will end up being residents here if this is approved. And you can read the last one there, is that they've been in Boyne City for 3 years, grew up here. We live in an apartment and desperately looking for other options with their two kids, and they can't find anything. So it's a constant theme, and I think it's consistent with the study the Housing North has done. I also have in the material I submitted to you as a link to a HUD article that they did this last spring, and talks about the fact that the average price of a new manufactured home in 2018, which is what the data was based on, was $78,500, $52,000 for a single piece home, $99,500 for a two piece home, that 22 million people with a median annual household income of $30,000 live in manufactured homes, and more than half of those earn less than $30,000 per year. That study just reinforces, I think, that the manufactured homes is the largest source of unsubsidized affordable housing in the United States. I've also attached as an exhibit 3 to my submission is a study I purchased from DataComp Northern Michigan that shows in Northern Michigan, the occupancy in manufactured home communities is 96%. That's effectively 100% with a couple of move-outs. That's consistent with Lakeview Village is 100%. And they just got approval to expand because they have so much demand. What that tells us, I think, is people want to live in manufactured home communities. If they didn't, why would they have 96% plus occupancy and be very popular? The average rent per month in the manufactured home communities in Northern Michigan is $417 per month. And the rents only increased 3% since 2016. So I'd like to now just jump to the section of my submission beginning on page 8 that addresses quickly the factors under section 2.5C of the zoning ordinance, which I believe are the applicable factors to be considered by the commission in determining whether this property should be rezoned. The MHDD district, as you all know, was adopted this January, and I've attached the minutes from that meeting also as an exhibit. And it suggests that the MHDD district was established to address the housing shortage, and rightfully so. And this property, and I believe Scott said this, it's virtually the only property that meets the criteria of 10 contiguous or more acres in the city, and that is serviced by water and sewer, and is the only parcel that could facilitate MHDD zoning. Is it more appropriate than the current another zoning district? I submit it is not. You can only have manufactured home communities in MHDD, and therefore that's the only designation that this property can be zoned for to comply with your ordinance. Can it be reasonably used as zoned? And this is on page 8 again in my submission. And as we've discussed, Mr. Maxey and myself tried to market this property and sought out other developers. And the answer was, you can't do it. The numbers don't work. The demographics don't work. And I've put the formula and the numbers in the my submission that talks about what the cost is to build the 212 units is about $23,500,000. And if you do the math on what it takes to to manage that, to get a return on investment, to attract a landlord that would be willing to invest $23 million, you're going to get rent rates of about $1,400 a month for 861 square feet of living space. Compare that to a multi-sectional home, which is about 1,568 square feet, where you will have your own home with a garage for substantially less than that, you know, maybe 900 to 1,100 a month. So the cost benefit of manufactured homes is pretty apparent, and that the zoning for these apartments just doesn't work with the math and the demographics of who needs homes in the community. The proposed zoning change is supported by and consistent with the goals, policies, and future land use of the city comprehension plan. And I really got to applaud the Planning Commission and your commission, because the master plan is a guide that was developed based on data from 2014, which is now six and a half years old. Of course, I think there's been a dramatic change in the demand for affordable housing, lack of affordable housing in the community. And, you know, there's been substantial changes in the property zoning around this parcel with the Brook care facility and, you know, the zoning for Mixer Maxi under his conditional zoning, zoning it to the 212 units. So I think it is compatible with the master plan. And I think Scott McPherson correctly pointed out, you know, that doesn't tie your hands because there are other suggested considerations for parcels for other zoning districts. The proposed change is compatible with established land use patterns surrounding this property and impacts on environmental density, nature of use, traffic impact, aesthetic infrastructure, and potential influence on property values is consistent with the needs of the community. This area has gone from less dense to more dense. The Brook Retirement Assisted Living Community is higher density than what it was initially zoned for. Of course, the conditional zoning for Mr. Maxi raised the density to over 7 units per acre for this site. So the traffic studies and everything we've submitted, and as Mr. McPherson correctly noted, I don't think this qualifies or requires a traffic study, but nonetheless, one was done and has been submitted, shows this is not an issue for traffic. And that goes into factor number 5, that all the potential uses allowed in the zoning district are compatible with the site's physical, geological, hydrological, and other environmental features. The traffic study I've attached is Exhibit 7. The soil study is attached to Exhibit 8. It says this is not a problem for building the piers that are necessary for any construction for that matter. And then there's a wetland study we've attached to Exhibit 9. It says this is no areas on the site that are designated as wetland. Number 6, the change would not severely impact traffic, public facilities, utilities, and characteristics of the area. The studies that we've attached is 7, 8, and 9 for the traffic. And I think the comments by Mr. McPherson clearly indicate that the city has concluded that this use is less intense than the use approved previously, and therefore that the city facilities are adequate to handle what is proposed for this use. The rezoning would constitute and create an isolated and unplanned spot zone, granting a special privilege to one landowner not available to others. That's number 7. The MHDD district, as we discussed, was really established this last January. It is one that specifies for 10 acres minimum. This proposed zoning does not have the trappings of a spot zoning. It's only for an isolated area, and that this is a new zoning district and its placement would inevitably be an isolated, that dimensional natural characteristics of land within the city that would meet the other necessary criteria virtually limit the qualifying properties to this parcel. So we don't believe that is a a factor that is a negative one. The change of the present district boundaries is consistent in relation to existing uses, and construction of the site will be able to meet dimensional regulations for the proposal in the district listed in the schedule of regulations. As we've discussed, this will be consistent with regulations promulgated and adopted by the State of Michigan Mobile Home Commission Act, and works in hand with your local board, your planning commission for approval of the site plan and other bodies. And again, this already is zoned for 212 units, and this is a decrease in that density. Number nine, there's been a change of conditions in the area supporting the proposed rezoning. I think, again, Mr. McPherson correctly acknowledged in his report that when it was rezoned in 2016, there was a acute shortage of affordable housing, and that has only increased since then because there's no solution that's been forthcoming for any sizable project that's going to address the need for the type of housing required and necessary. Number 10, adequate sites are neither properly zoned nor available elsewhere to accommodate the proposed uses permitted in the requested zoning district. There's no other property in the city of Boyne City zoned for MHDD that is available for development. There are no other 10 acre plus parcels available that could facilitate the MHDD designation except for this property. Factor 11, there was a mistake in the original zoning. I don't think that's a factor and is applicable to the request. There was no mistake for the conditional zoning. Number 12, the request has not been previously submitted within the past year. And of course, this has not been previously submitted to your city council in the past year. Having said that, I submit that the property is does comply and meets the standards and with section 2.5C of your ordinance, and welcome any questions that you may have of myself or Mr. Westfall.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the presentation. Commissioners, at this point, I think we need to go to the public comments, and we will have commissioner input soon thereafter, and then we can have staff and the developers have any conclusive wrap-ups that they need to do. So that sounds okay, commissioners?
Sounds good.
Okay. So at this time, Patrick, I'm sure we have some citizen input, and I'll review that a little bit. Please state your name and your address, and we'll have a 5-minute limit on your comments, and please stick to the topics. So I'll turn it over to you, Patrick, to have our public citizens' comments.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. And one thing I'll add is if someone is calling from a telephone, they can dial 9 and it will use the raise hand function as well. But we can go ahead and go through in order. And first is Sid Baxter, and I could go ahead and unmute.
Thank you, Patrick. And thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You bet.
I live at 104 Hawk Ridge Drive, Unit 13, Hawk Ridge Condominiums. We are part-time residents here. We've been paying taxes here for 26 years. And we have a vested interest in the service support staff. We at this condominium association, we're a small association, We need lawn service, snow service, general maintenance, tree trimming. All of our contractors that we try to call are backed up tremendously. We have a few set people that we use, but to get support staff has been very, very challenging lately. And the answer they keep giving us is we can't get help. I lived in a mountain resort town a few decades ago, and the city council in that town went to extraordinary measures to provide affordable housing for its employees. They partnered with the county in some occasions, but they've built these units, and it's helped mitigate some of the housing needs for that support staff that we just talked about. In my opinion, Fox Run is needed. It's well planned, as you can see. It meets all the codes, et cetera, and all state regulations. 145 homes is a great step forward to help meet our employee housing need. Let's be the leaders up here, up north, and be the first to take that step and vote to rezone this and allow this development. You've been listening to stuff, information since 2016. We haven't done anything yet, so I challenge this commission to take a step forward and be the outlier, I guess, and the leader. And this thing is supported by Steve Schnell. I know Pat Little did at our team Boyne a few weeks ago, and other people that I have spoken to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next one, Patrick.
Yes, next we have Michelle Courtright. I'll go ahead and unmute.
Yes, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle Courtright, 221 Water Street, and I'm a member of the Boyne Housing Solutions Group. I would like to emphasize the need for attainable housing in our community and just state the fact that the proposed project would help us meet this need. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Next is Steve Schnell.
Yes, okay. Thanks. Steve Schnell, Charlevoix County Housing Ready Program Director. Wanted to share some quick thoughts on housing needs generally. I think your city staff attorney provided an excellent summary of the task before you. What you have before you is to decide if this property, the surrounding land use and infrastructure is appropriate for this type of land use that's being proposed. There have been a lot of great questions asked at the Planning Commission meeting, and you'll probably hear more tonight from the public and from yourselves about the details of how the property will be developed specifically, how the drainage will be handled, whether the homes will comply with local zoning and the state law. That's all part of the next phase. A lot of that is part of the next phase of review by your Planning Commission, by the state. Tonight and at your second reading, you're looking for appropriateness of this property for Boyne City and for this land use. As far as the question as to whether there is a need for housing, there is a great need for more housing choices in Boyne City. With the recent approval to expand existing manufactured home community to its capacity or near capacity, it's indicative of a demand for this type of housing. Manufactured housing is not a perfect solution. There is no one type of housing that's going to be a perfect solution for any community. But in Boyne City, there is serious competition and demand for any home that is livable and priced under $250,000. Competition often comes from seasonal homeowners, short-term rental homes, but many of the local people, people who work for local businesses, even people who own local businesses cannot find attainable homes in the housing market of Boyne City. So looking at your master plan, there is support in your master plan for housing choices such as this, and definitely for increasing your housing choices. Manufactured homes should be considered as one of those housing choices. We support the city's goal to increase housing choices, including expanding the types of housing available to our workforce. One thing that's mentioned in your master plan is aging in place. This idea that and concept that's very important, that you keep people within your community even as they age and their housing needs change. One of the opportunities for manufactured housing is that it does provide another option for people to downsize their homes or their housing situation and still live within the community. So I wanted to thank you all for your hard work. You've made a lot of decisions in the past to change your zoning to increase the opportunities for housing that are beyond just single family zoning. That's also important for your community, but it's also important to think outside of that and look hard and fast at some of these other options. And this is one of those options. So I know there's going to be a lot more questions at the site plan review process and that type of thing. So and those are important questions to address. But to look at this housing choice, I think, is a good one. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Next, we have John Lamont.
Thank you. John?
My only concern, and I've dealt with many multiple...
Can you give us your name and address, John?
I'm John Lamont, 4618 Mountain View, Boyne Falls, Michigan, EMS director.
Thank you.
My concern as an EMS director, I've been in multiple homes as to the management of the site. Our current Lakeshore property seems to be managed extremely well, where I've been in homes or sites where they're just not, no one has control. And so we end up with facilities that gaining access or egress becomes very difficult. And the problem is particularly when you talk about it, a manufactured home, where are we at in 10 or 15 years or 20 years? On recently, on a recent call, I mean, I'm not sure the stairs are going to support my weight. The floor that I'm walking across is wavy. My concern is who's managing and who's, I have lived in a manufacturing home. Tina and I recently, you know, when we were married, we started out that way. It was really wonderful. It was affordable, but I have not heard in the discussion, where are we at 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? Because when all of us are gone and this is still, you know, in the process of evolving, is there a control that says, okay, this is too old. This has got to go. You know, this is unsafe. Somebody's going to take action. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Patrick? Next is Jim Bauman.
Thank you, Jim. Go ahead, please. State your name.
Thank you, Mayor Needhammer. My name is Jim Bauman. I live at 1119 West Street. I've lived in the city for 12 years. For eight of those years, I was the executive director of the Boyne Area Chamber of Commerce. And that entire time and onward since that time, one of the major problems that businesses faced was hiring employees. And a reason they had trouble finding employees was that employees had trouble finding places to live. Developments like this will solve our problem. As the city attorney mentioned in his remarks, you know, it needs to be a legitimate interest. And this is an incredibly legitimate interest for our community. You guys, the whole community has been working to find developments like this for a number of years, and it's finally paying off. Our community started a Boyne Housing Solutions group to study housing and try to find developers that would work with us and put in developments like this. That group urged the hiring and creation of Steve Schnell's position, who just spoke a couple minutes ago. You know, he is the housing ready developer or coordinator. Housing ready, that's what we want. This is a potentially exactly what we're looking for. It's lower density than what it's zoned for now. The developer of Fox Run lives in the community. It's exactly what we're looking for. And I think it would just be a huge step backwards if we did not approve this development rezoning. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, Patrick?
Those are the only hands raised for the moment.
Okay. Well,
we have one now. Yes, Chris Christensen, I'll go ahead and unmute.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chris Christensen, 125 Stewart Street in Boyne City.
I was listening to the presentation, and look, I'm not opposed to it. I know we need solutions, and I'm not saying that this isn't an opportunity, but I'm concerned about some of the numbers that were being thrown around. I mean, whether you want to call it a single section home or a trailer, at the end of the day, I mean, it's a single wide or a double wide. That's what they are, and that's fine. I have no problem with them, especially since these will probably have to be newer. The issue at hand that I have was the ability to finance these. Although they may be amortized for 360 months, my experience with Charlevoix State Bank has been that even though they'll amortize for 30 years, every 5 years they have to refinance them, which will reassess the value of the home based on either the maintenance of the homeowner or whatever the market value of that product at that time might be. So they have to have the ability to refi after 5 years. The other concern that I had was at a $40,000 income, which is higher than the stated average or median income in the county of Charlevoix, if you were to take that at a 15% tax rate, that gives you $34,000 of disposable income through the course of the year, divided by 12 is $2,833 per month. If you stay by the guidance of about 30% toward your housing costs, then that leaves you with $850 a month toward housing. If you subtract the $475 per month for lot rent, that leaves you with $375 a month to make the house payment. And at 6% amortized over 360 years, that makes the purchase price to be $62,500 to hit that payment, which is only $7,000 higher than the minimum, which I'm assuming would be a single section home. And then the double section homes would be higher than that. So to propose this as an affordable option for people is viable, but at this point, it certainly wouldn't be the majority of affordable housing people that would be taking advantage of the 145 lots that are available here, or whatever that number might be. So, the other question that I have is that you're proposing garages on the two-sectional homes, so I'm assuming that there would be a property tax that would be involved with that, which would not be included in this number as well, because there'll be much like there's a property tax down at the Lakeview Village for structures, including decks, by the way. And I assume the city would be charging taxes for the decks and the shed and things of that nature. So at the current tax rate, I'm sure that would inflate these numbers at least by a little bit. So I guess my concern is that, this is an alternative for affordable housing or workforce housing or whatever you want to call that. But I guess my question would be, is it being dedicated for it, or is it being used as a way to get this through a loophole? And then at the end of the day, it really doesn't serve the purpose that it needs, considering the affordable rate of this is on the very low end of what will be available. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
No additional hands at this time.
Okay. I'm going to give it 10 seconds or so in case anybody out there is trying to call or trying to get in.
We do have one additional from Mark's iPad.
Okay. Mark, are you there? Is he having trouble getting in, Patrick? Or
looks like he's in and unmuted. Not sure what the issue would be.
Mark, are you there? Okay. What do you suggest, Patrick?
I could try one more time. He should be unmuted at the moment.
Tom?
Yes.
If Mark's iPad is having a problem, he may want to call our number, 582-6597, and let Pat know either his comment or what the issue is.
How do we communicate that to him? He just heard that through you?
Yeah, he should be able to hear it.
Yeah, okay. Again, that number.
That person, I don't know if that's a he or a she, but that person.
Fair enough. Yes. That number.
582-6597.
6597 for Mark's iPad.
and we're in the 231 area code. I'm not sure where that person's calling from. Originally, I thought that was the attorney for the applicant.
Okay. Well, Mark, you have that option if you're listening. Let's move on.
I'm going to go check with Pat and see if she's hang on a sec.
Okay. I'm going
to unmute Pat here for a sec. If I can. Pat, did you get any call?
No, I've had no calls.
All right. Thank you. I would say continue at this point, Tom.
Okay. As I said, I think at this point we go back to staff if they want to have any conclusive comments, including Mr. Murray or Scott or Mike Kane or Patrick, and then we'll let Mr. Bracci have some closing comments, and then we'll go to board deliberation. So at this point, is there anyone from staff that would like to, after we've heard the comments, after we've heard the presentation, is there any comments from our staff?
I guess if I may, Tom, the only thing that I would go back to is the purpose of what we're here for tonight. This is the first reading, potentially, of consideration of a rezoning request. The rezoning request is what's before us tonight, and potentially at a second reading that would be held. You're not looking to make any final determination today. You're looking to, you know, begin to receive input on this matter and determine if it should go forward to a second reading. Based on what I've heard this point, and you have to make your own determinations, it seems like there is enough information to go forward and not enough questions to prevent it from going forward to a second reading. So that's the matter before you this evening. If I can be of any other assistance, let me know.
Thank you, Mike. Scott or Jim, anything to weigh in on?
No, I think Mike summarized that very well, what you're charged with tonight.
Okay. Yes, Jim?
No, I don't have any comment. I think it was a good presentation by all. And so I just share Mike's view that it's, you know, first reading, but I don't have any comment because I think it was well presented by everybody.
Thank you, Jim. At this point, I'll turn it back over to you, Steve, for any concluding remarks from your team.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I guess some of the comments, I'll just briefly address them. I don't think they're appropriate, but just regarding the governance and the upkeep of these communities, of course, is, you know, Lakeview is a very well-run, nice-looking community. We will have guidelines for living, as all communities do. Lakeview, I no doubt has it. It does make sure that the communities maintain the integrity of the, you know, the look and tidiness and what you want in your community as a successful community. And I can assure you, as long as I'm involved, it'll be operated at a top level. And I anticipate doing that for many years. So I thank you very much for your time this evening. I agree with Mr. Kane's assessment of your charge tonight is to, you know, to move it forward, hopefully for a second reading. And hopefully we can, you know, get this wrapped up at the second reading. And if there are any questions that any of the commissioners have, I'm more than happy to address those. And Mr. Westfall, who's on the line as well. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I think it's time. Let's go to board deliberation. Ron, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, I'm in favor of the project and also in favor of the zoning change and having us move forward to the public hearing, second public hearing. And this project, in my mind, is, you know, it fits with all our city goals and our city master plan, and it does serve us serve the need that's desperately needed for this community to thrive and continue to thrive. So I'm all in favor of moving forward with it.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Let's find our paperwork here. Okay, Dean?
Yeah, I just had one question and a comment. In the letter that accompanied the application, there was a statement in there that manufactured homes are restricted to 6 per acre. And I think I heard in the discussion that there's not really a specific section of the law that says it shall be less than 6 units per acre or equal to, but rather that as a practical matter, given the setbacks that are required by the state and the open space and so on and infrastructure, that you couldn't get over 6 per acre, regardless of what ordinance says. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So the only other thing I had is really a comment. I'm a little bit concerned about the Planning Commission recommendation. Here they voted 4-2 not to recommend it. And I kind of concur with the idea that they might have ended up sort of veering off into factors in making that decision that might not have been as important. I think that it is important, though, that the Planning Commission it probably should be going one by one through each of the 12 factors, not just touching on them, but rather thoroughly discussing them. One of the reasons I think that is that, you know, rezoning decisions are like forever decisions. Like, we make this decision, it has long-term impact in our community. And to have the opportunity for it to be substantively and really thoroughly discussed, certainly at the Planning Commission level, and a thoughtful recommendation made on that basis is important. So I think that it would be worthwhile to have the Planning Commission look at this again. Having said that, is there an option for us to, maybe Jim can answer this, to schedule a second reading, yet request that the Planning Commission at their next meeting, which I think is next week maybe, do another round on this? They don't need presentations and all that, but to really help us by thoughtfully discussing each of the 12 factors that are outlined in our zoning ordinance to consider as a basis for making a zoning rezoning decision.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No, I appreciate your comment, but I guess my question, should I turn that over to Jim right now for his counterpoint or point? Yes, Jim, I see your hands up.
Well, I don't have anything different than what I said in my beginning comments. The statute says you certainly may, and I emphasize the word may, refer it back to the Planning Commission. And then it says for consideration and comment within a time frame specified by the City Council. So if you're going to do it, I presume you would advance a reason why and then a specified time limit, but you are not obligated to do so, but you may.
So I guess my question, Jim, was could we schedule a second reading and still ask the Planning Commission to do that, a second look at it, or are those two mutually exclusive?
Maybe that's a Mike or Scott question, because I don't know when the Planning Commission meets next. But keep in mind, if in fact there are, recommendations, and somehow the ordinance or the designation would change significantly, and I don't really know how you could do that because it's a pretty simple request to rezone to the manufactured housing development district. But if it changes much, we'd have to have a new first reading with the City Commission.
Okay.
Again, I don't know how that would happen because, again, it is a request. You know, it would be applicable to this project or the next project or the next project. You know, the request is to simply rezone to manufactured housing development district. You're not approving this site plan. You're approving a rezoning, or being asked to approve a rezoning.
Right. Yeah, I guess, you know, my my point is, I think that it would be better for us to have at least a, maybe we won't get concurrence from the Planning Commission on this. Well, we don't know how we're going to vote, but at least have them consider the things that we think are most important to consider in this, as opposed to where we think they might have focused on. And for us to have that information makes it a little bit easier, I think, to make that final decision when that time comes.
Tom?
Yes, Mike?
Going back to Dean's original question, could both of those things happen concurrently? As long as the schedule's lined up, I don't know why the commission could approve a motion or could not approve a motion such as that. So I would say technically, yes. My second question would be, and I guess maybe it's more of a comment, I'm not necessarily sure that that's wise or going to be helpful. And I guess it all depends on what Dean's question is. If it's to provide clarity as to why the Planning Commission voted the way they did, we already have comments from the attorney that was present at that site, Rhonda, who said, even though they technically didn't put it in the form of the 12-step process, they basically addressed all of those issues in there. So I think they've gone through the process and for whatever criteria, they reached the conclusion and made the recommendation that they did. I also thought I heard Dean say that if they're going to focus on the issues that they should be focusing on, that sounds to me more like we're asking them to reconsider their decision and to see if it was based on something. I'm a little bit nervous with that. And I'm just thinking that there could be negative outcomes with regards to it. So I think we've got the information from the Planning Commission for what it's worth. And at this point, it's up to the City Commission to determine what to go forward with that. So technically, yes, I think you can. I'm just not sure that we should.
Okay, thank you.
Just so the record's clear, Rhonda Stowers works with me. She's not a different attorney with, you know, she's with Plunkett Cooney. And my associate, so we're a team.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, Dean?
No, that's all.
Okay, thank you. Sally?
Well, I just get down to the simple fact that it's a really excellent project. We really need it. And because of what it is, it requires the zoning change. So I'm pretty much with Ron on this. I'm all for it.
Okay. So just to clarify, you would be in favor of
second reading, September.
Second reading. Okay. Thank you, Sally. Hugh?
Yeah, I don't. I'm a bit confused about what's an appropriate question and what's not an appropriate question. But this is just a basic thing as far as the road infrastructure. Is that built to, you know, common standard, or if at some point in the future it could be the cities and or how would that work? Or is that not?
I could jump in there real quickly.
Yes, Mike.
Those are. I'm not aware of any case, and maybe Steve can go into this. All the infrastructure in the manufactured housing community, much like it is in Lakeview, is privately owned and is part of the development. I can't think of an example. I've been associated with other manufactured housing communities where that's not the case, whether it's the roads, the water system, or the sanitary sewer system. While we supply those elements, all the pipes and all the maintenance and all every meter in that facility is the development. The same would be with the roads. So it'd be a private road built to, I don't know if the state has specific standards of it. It wouldn't be built to necessarily our standards as a city street. Much like Harbridge Park wasn't built to our city street standards and is a private street.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Well, I fully support this project. There's just a lot of things about it that sound like it is going to be very beneficial to the community. And the only thing, you know, I know trailers and trailer parks have kind of a negative connotation. but they've come a long way. And in Lakeview Estates, to me, just points out, even though there's older trailers, 40, 50 years old, and there's a real sense of community there. It's well managed. People like living there. As you age in place, it's a great place to be. And I just really think this is a positive thing for the community. And unlike Dean, I wouldn't recommend us sending this back to the Planning Commission. I think we got the comment from the Planning Commission. They decided not to recommend this, but I really do think that we need to move forward with a second reading and maybe hopefully get more comment from the neighborhood and other people in the community to really buy into this and have a great thing moving forward for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh. Well, I am in support of, I think, of a very advantageous project to our community. I think when we look at the conditions that why we would rezone, it meets our citywide goals for more housing. It meets our master plan goal for more housing. It meets our Housing Solutions Committee goals for more housing. It meets our commitment to hire Steve to coordinate housing opportunities. And I can go on and on and on. I think this is going to be a benefit to our community. If we don't tackle housing that we've talked about for 4 years, our community cannot keep moving forward. So this is a great opportunity. Is it the best for everyone? No. Is it best for 145 families? Absolutely. So I am also in favor of moving it on to a second reading on September 2nd. Yes.
Well, and you just hit the two words that I was going to comment about, September 22nd, which is our next scheduled City Commission meeting. And my recommendation to the City Commission would be that we move it to our October 13th meeting. And the rationale for that is that's another evening meeting. But we just heard that, you know, we're looking for more public input as we move forward on this process. I think we'd probably have more opportunity for people after the working hours to come in and comment on it in an evening or 7 p.m. meeting. And while we could do that by changing the date of our September 22nd meeting to a 7 p.m. meeting, again, just out of overabundance of caution and transparency, I'd really rather not be jacking meeting times around on a sensitive subject like this. So my recommendation to the commission is if you do look forward with the second reading, that you do it at our 7 p.m. meeting on October 13th to give the citizenry the most opportunity to comment on this before the commission considers a decision.
Mayor, could I comment?
Please.
Yeah, I think that's a really great idea. You know, in the past as well, we've done an excellent job of kind of promoting these meetings and the proposals and all the conversation that goes on around them in advance of our public meetings. And I think that's really served us well. And if we can do that again to make that extra special effort like we've done before, I think that does a service to our community by being sure that we've connected with people who will both support something or folks who have concerns.
I would counterpoint that in saying that many, many, many times in the past, we have changed from a noon to an evening meeting for that same reason, so that more people could participate. I agree with you that transparency is our goal and having the community weigh in is our goal, but I don't mind moving the September 22nd to an evening meeting. So, I could settle for either one, commissioners.
Well, I'd like to make a motion, if that's okay, Mr. Mayor.
I think we're ready.
I move that the City Commission approve the first reading of the rezoning application submitted by GISA LLC to rezone parcels 15-051-026-005-00 and
15-051-026-004-15 from conditional multiple family residential district to manufactured housing development district, and schedule a second reading for the October 13, 2020 City Commission meeting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you very much. Steve, if you're still there, we will refer you to staff, and I'm sure this is the beginning of further communication with our staff. So with that being said, let's move on to item B, which is water treatment plant lagoon area hydrological study. I'll turn that over to Tim.
No, this is Mark Fowler, and I'm working to unmute him right now. Hang on a second, please.
Okay.
Mark, are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me, Mayor?
I can.
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Yes, we just got issued our reissued our NPDES discharge permit. It comes up for renewal every 5 years. Well, this time it became effective August 1st, and they added some additional requirements in regards to our lagoon. They want us to perform a hydrogeological analysis to determine groundwater flow and complete a monitoring well sampling plan, and they need to be completed and submitted to Eagle by October 29th, 2020. They gave us 90 days from the August 1st start. There are four monitoring wells around the lagoons. Back in 85, they installed them. The city sampled them for 4 or 5 years. They found no issue with the lagoons, the liners or anything, so they discontinued. They didn't have to sample. And so now it's been 30 years, so they want us to start sampling again for the next few years and see if there's any change and if there's any leakage or whatever. So I've reached out to the city's engineer, C2AE, and they don't do hydrogeological assessments. So then I contacted Tetra Tech, and due to the short timeline imposed here, I'd proposed that they would be the ones to complete the work. Got the cost breakdown here. Field works, $2,958. The hydrogeological report and sampling plan, $2,345, for a total of $5,303. And we do have money in the budget. You know, it was an unexpected cost because we didn't even get the draft permit until April 28th after we'd already done our budget. But we do have the money to cover it. So I recommend the city commission authorize the city manager to sign the agreement to have Tetra Tech perform the hydrogeological study for $5,303. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mark. Any other comments from staff or the public? Okay, let's move on to Dean.
I'm good.
Okay. Sally?
I'm good.
You?
Yeah, I wouldn't know what question to ask about a lagoon pond survey like this, so I'm good.
Rod?
I'm good with the proposal.
I'm in favor also and would look for a motion.
Move that the city commission authorize the city manager to sign the agreement to have Tetra Tech perform the hydrogeological study for 5303.
Second.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item C, citywide water system valve exercising. Mark?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I'd like to propose the city hire Wax Water to perform services on our valve exercising program. Originally, they did come in September of 2015, did half, and then the other half of May of 2016. And my original plan then had been for us to pick up that and start exercising the valves on our own, because they hadn't been exercised in quite a long time, and they came and got them freed up and got everything checked out. And my plan had been for us to do it, but we haven't had time. We've been real busy. And then for the last two summers, I was going to try to get summer help to do it, help us with that, but we haven't had any applications. So we had no summer help for the last 2 years. So I'd like to propose that they do this work. They have all the equipment, and they'll clean out the valve boxes, get everything exercised, perform any minor repairs. And they provided the GPS coordinates for us last time. If there's any new valves in the system, which there is since then, they'll provide the GPS coordinates, get everything set back up into the GIS system. You know, they perform work all over the state, Michigan and the Midwest. Locally, they service valves in Petoskey and Traverse City. And this would be spread over 3 years. So it'd be $10,500, $583 annually for each of the next 3 years. We'd have them do approximately one third of the valves each year just to get them on a rotation. So if we could, at the end of that 3 years, be able to pick it up, we wouldn't have many. We could try to keep it going. And by coordinating with the same time they're in Petoskey, we can save $750 from the mobilization fee. That would cut down on the cost and bring the cost down to $9,833. And we do have money available in the budget to pay for this. So I'd recommend the city commission authorize the city manager to sign the agreement to have Wax Water perform the valve work for the next 3 years for an annual amount of $10,583, or if we do it in coordination, it would be $9,833. If there's any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Do we have any other input from staff or the public? Okay, Sally, you want to start? Is Sally muted? There you go. Oh.
Good, looks good to me.
Okay, thank you, Sally. You?
Yeah, I'm good with this, but the only thing I wonder, Mark, is an appropriate job for summer help to do something as important as this? Should this just be worked into
Well, what I was going to do, they would be, because some of the valves would take two, I would have them working with one of my guys, so to try to get it, there would be one of our operators assisting them, so we wouldn't have to put two of our own on trying to get things done there.
I just wonder if it would be better to work this into, you know, just an annual cost that, and not worry about summer help, but it's not.
Yeah.
That's all I had. Thanks.
And I had thought of that, Hugh, because that's what Petoskey does. They have they're on a 4-year rotation. So.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hugh. Ron?
I got a question for Mark. There's a fire hydrant with some safety here. At the corner of Court and Robinson Street, that's been open for a couple months now. Is that one of these hydrants that's being maintained, being changed or worked on?
Yes, sir. Yeah, the guys actually—they just finished it up yesterday and got it all put back together and closed. What we had originally had was it looks like somebody at some point had hit it. Because when the guys went to test it, it was leaking when they turned it on. So we got a new part for it. And the riser we got from the ironworks actually had a pinhole in the casting. So when they put it back together and got it on, it started spraying all over again through the casting. So we had to order a new casting, get that on there. And we finally got the time to get it back in, but it's all back in service. The hole is filled in and it's all set to go.
Well, thank you.
All right. Dean?
I'm good.
I am also good. Looking for a motion?
I'll move to award an agreement with Water to perform a valve work for the next 3 years for an annual amount of $10,583 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Let's move on to city goals.
Yes, I put this back on our agenda, one, to let you know that we hadn't forgotten about it. We had scheduled to have this come back at our work session on the week of July 20th. That's a week I took off, so it didn't happen then. Obviously, a lot has happened since we've scheduled this, and I think we're a little bit off track with regards to it. Basically, this spring, we've been dealing with the consequences mainly of COVID and working remotely for a good chunk of that time, dealing with the economic downturn and trying to help our businesses, high water level. Just it seems like we've been taking on a lot bigger and more tasks that were not on this list and that are generally either new or just been taking a lot longer to do. So I just wanted to basically say we're focused on addressing these items. We tried to make sure that we incorporated them in the budget as it's going forward. But we're missing some of our completion and target dates that we originally set back when we approved this in 2019. I didn't know if the commission wanted to go through these this evening. I asked the department heads to be ready to talk about any of these items at tonight's meeting. We could schedule another work session to do it at some point in the future. I just want to let the commission know that we are continuing to work on these as we have time available in the background.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioners? Yeah, so we had some options going through them and talk about them each one and hear Mike's or staff's input. Maybe create some goals or some at least output as to where we headed with each goal, or we could schedule a workshop because it could get into quite a discussion, I would think. I'm open for either one. How do you feel, commissioners?
I would prefer a work session.
I would too.
So would I.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think that there's nothing unimportant on this list. It's still relevant. But one of the things we might be able to do in a work session too is kind of revisit these and refine the action items. I think if we went through this, we'd find that all of the goals are still just as relevant as they were the day we incorporated them. But how are the action items, I think, might change a bit. Hardly ever we take away from Mike and staff's list, but we certainly would have the opportunity to add to it if we wanted to.
Well, I appreciate, Dean, your input because a lot of this was your lead and the way we came to this goal setting process was your very knowledgeable input. So, Mike, can we task you with finding a common date for us for a work session?
Yeah, I just want to talk to the commission a little bit about timing. One of the issues that we've dealt with, in addition to all those other issues that I mentioned at the ongoing that have kind of sidetracked us a little bit, is just right now we're still into our peak summer season. And I certainly think a work session would be good. I would think the earliest that we could potentially do one would be in September. Otherwise, I think we're just piling more stuff on to the department heads right now. And to be candid with you, October might actually be better, but I just want to get your feedback on that. I mean, I want to do this thing justice and make sure people have the time to think about it, not when they're, right now everybody's kind of under fire. So I know Tim's going to be busy with all the, the issue with regards to the shoreline. That's going to be the next couple of months. Barb's got all of her marina project. I know we want to have her for some of the discussion about the website, which I know is a key issue for a number of commissioners, things of that nature. So I'd like to get through that. And if we are going to pick a time that's going to work. So I want that to be realistic.
Well, by October, you can knock off many more goals. You can just get them checked off.
Well, and there's an opportunity to do that. We could do that too. So I would think the first date that I would say would maybe be like Tuesday the 6th or Tuesday the 20th. Would be the first two I'd recommend. I don't know if other people's schedules or And I can check individual schedules. I can do that outside of the meeting too with some surveys.
I would go for the 6th of October.
That would work for me.
Yeah, that works for me. It could be a work session.
Yes.
Not an hour before a commission meeting, but a actual work session.
Yeah, our meeting's on that in October on the 13th and the 27th. So I was trying to pick a date where we didn't have anything else on the agenda. We could just focus on this.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I'm hearing a consensus for the 6th. I'll send out a confirming email tomorrow and see if that works for everybody so they can check their calendars.
Fair enough, commissioners.
That sounds good. Could I ask a question about one of the goals?
Please, Dean.
The first one there about stewards taxpayers' funds. Hear all the things and watch the MML Monday meetings and the other stuff they've done in the Treasury things, and it's all very fascinating. It sounds like we're in pretty good shape for this fiscal year, but it seems like in every one of those webinars and communications, they emphasize great uncertainty about years beyond this fiscal year. For that matter, for that reason, I think that, that five-year, that forecasting model is going to be like super critical to us as we start to develop next fiscal year's budget. I'm just wondering if you have any more news about that, or whether you believe that we can have, a good product to do some scenario testing or forecasting by the time we start developing the next fiscal year's budget.
The short answer is yes. Last week I met with Mr. Wiesner, who had been working on our earlier model over the winter months to try and put it in a more usable, more user-friendly format for us. And it appears to me that he has accomplished a good part of that task. I'd also reached out in the last couple months during kind of the early days of COVID before things got really crazy with our the firm that Baker Tilly, who helped us with the marina analysis. And they weren't really doing too much of this, but they were willing to talk to us about it. But I never really took it past that point, just to see where Mike ended up. So I think he might have, I think his tool, at least based on the meeting I had with him last week and the couple hours that he and I went over it, it looks a lot more refined, and I see some help, but also a bit of uncertainty. I think the forecasting model is not going to be quite as helpful, just because so many of the parameters I think are going to be changing. What I think it will help us to do is react quickly with regards to, okay, revenue sharing has been eliminated for this year. What do our numbers look like? So it's going to be hard to predict out 15 years with regards to it, but a year or two, for this year's budget or next year's budget, and based on what the latest input from the state, putting those into that model and seeing what numbers are coming up with, I think could be very helpful. So yes, we're continuing. That's one that we have been continuing to work on and have some, I think, some additional results on.
Great,
I still don't think Mike's is quite as friendly as what we got from Baker Tilly, but it's a lot better than what I think we saw at some of the earlier work sessions.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're agreeing to a October 6th work session, time to be determined. All right, let's move on in the agenda to go to the order. Commissioners, Hugh, anything?
I'm good, yep. Thanks.
Okay, Hugh, thanks. Ron?
I'm okay.
Dean?
I'm good.
Sally?
Good.
Okay. Moving on to announcements, the next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for August 25th at noon. It is 9:16, and I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a second. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Appreciate it.